Picture this. It's a gorgeous summer afternoon, 78 degrees on the ground, visibility 10 miles, not a cloud in the sky except for some puffy cumulus building to the east. You're on final? About a mile out. Power is pulled back, airspeed is stabilized, the numbers are right there. And then the engine gets quiet, not quit, just quieter, maybe 100 RPM drop. You add a little back pressure instinctively. Something feels off, but you can't quite name it. You're at 200 feet. You're slow. The runway is right in front of you. That is not a good moment to be working through a diagnosis. I'm Pattern on Radio Hangar, and today we're talking about one of the most preventable emergencies in general aviation and one of the most misunderstood, carburetor icing. The engine problem that does not care that the weather is beautiful, the one that happens most often when conditions look absolutely fine. Quick shout out to AviationSoul.com before we dig in. They make challenge coins for pilots at every step of the journey. First solo, private certificate, instrument rating, commercial, ATP, solid quality stuff, the kind of thing you actually keep in display. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Alright, let's start with the physics, because this is one of those emergencies where understanding why it happens is what makes you respect it. A carburetor's job is to mix air and fuel in the right proportions before delivering that mixture to the engine. To do that, it uses something called a venturi. The venturi is a narrowing in the intake path. Air speeds up as it passes through the narrow throat, and when it speeds up, its pressure drops. That's Bernoulli's principle. And when pressure drops, temperature drops. Inside a carburetor venturi, that temperature drop can be anywhere from 20 to 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's before we account for what happens next. When the fuel is introduced into that airstream and vaporizes, evaporative cooling takes another 10 to 15 degrees off the temperature. So, you've got two separate cooling effects happening at the same time. Venturi cooling from the pressure drop, and evaporative cooling from fuel vaporization. Add those together, and you have a situation where air that entered the carburetor at 65 degrees Fahrenheit might be at 15 or 20 degrees by the time it reaches the throttle valve. Well below freezing, ice can form. And it does. Here's where the real trap is. Most pilots, especially early in training, associate icing with cold weather. Ice is a winter thing. You worry about structural ice on the airframe when you're in the clouds in January. You don't think about ice on a clear August afternoon, but carburetor icing doesn't work that way. The conditions most favorable for carburetor ice are temperatures between roughly 30 and 80 degrees Fahrenheit at the carburetor inlet, combined with high relative humidity. The FAA's Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge includes a chart that maps this out, plotting temperature against dew point spread, showing the zones where serious icing is possible, where icing is probable, and where even trace icing can occur. When you look at that chart, what stands out is how much of the high-risk zone sits right in the middle of what most people would call pleasant flying weather, 60, 65, 70 degrees, high humidity. Those are the conditions people want to fly in, and those are exactly the conditions where carburetor ice is most likely to develop. The dew point spread is your indicator. The dew point is the temperature at which the air becomes saturated, where moisture begins to condense. When the gap between air temperature and dew point is small, say less than 15 or 20 degrees, humidity is high and icing risk goes up significantly. On a warm, muggy summer day, that spread can be tiny, 5 or 10 degrees. Before every flight, I want you to look at temperature and dew point. They're right there in the METAR. If that spread is tight and you're flying a carbureted engine, start thinking about icing before you even get in the airplane. Now let's talk about when icing is most likely to form during a flight, because it's not random. It tends to hit at specific times. The highest risk is at reduced power settings. When you pull the throttle back, airflow through the venturi slows. The throttle plate is partially closed. Both of those factors change the airflow dynamics in ways that encourage ice formation. There's also less combustion heat available at lower power, so less warmth to fight off the accumulation. This is why the pattern and approach phases are so dangerous. You're at reduced power almost the entire time you're maneuvering to land. You've descended from cruise altitude, where you were in cooler, often more humid air. Your power came back for the descent, came back more for base, came back more for final. If icing conditions are present at all, that sequence is prime time for ice to build. Extended cruise flight at lower power settings also carries risk. It's actually full throttle cruise that's least susceptible, because the throttle plate is wide open and the engine is running hot. One more situation worth flagging. Flying invisible moisture at cruise altitude. If you're flying through rain or in humid air near clouds, and your temperature is in that icing-prone range, you can get ice at altitude during cruise. This sometimes surprises pilots because they associate the problem with the pattern, not with level flight at 3,000 feet over flat terrain. Let me walk you through what icing actually feels like when it's developing. The first sign is usually a gradual RPM drop, not sudden, not dramatic, just a few tens of RPM, maybe 100. Your tachometer tells you something has changed, but it's subtle enough that it's easy to chalk up to something else. Maybe a little turbulence. Maybe I just flew through a patch of denser air. Easy to dismiss on aircraft with fuel flow. Gauges, you may notice a slight change there too. On some engines, roughness starts before the RPM actually drops. The early signs vary a little by engine and aircraft, which is another reason knowing your airplane matters. If you miss those early signs and the ice keeps building, the drop becomes more pronounced. The engine may start running rough. The power loss is no longer subtle. And eventually, if you still haven't applied carb heat, the throttle valve ices over completely. The engine stops. That is the end of the road. We want to never get there. Here's something worth knowing about your pre-flight. During the run-up, your checklist almost certainly calls for you to test carburetor heat. What you're actually doing is more than a systems check. If carb ice has formed while you were sitting at idle before the run-up, applying carb heat should cause a brief RPM drop followed by a rise above the original RPM as the ice melts and the restriction clears. Some pilots do the carb heat check and see an RPM drop and think everything's normal. But if that RPM never comes back up, or comes back higher than it started, pay attention. You may have just melted ice that formed at idle before you even taxied. That's a signal about the conditions you're flying in. Take note of it. The procedure in flight is carb heat. When you pull the knob, warm air is drawn from around the exhaust manifold and routed into the carburetor intake, bypassing the cold ram air and introducing heat to melt any accumulation. Here's the part that trips pilots up. When you first apply carb heat, the engine is going to get worse before it gets better. RPM drops, the engine might run rough, it might shake, you might feel like you've made things worse. You haven't. What's happening is exactly right. The warm air is melting the ice, and that meltwater is passing through the engine briefly as water. Water doesn't combust. The roughness and the RPM drop are the ice clearing. This is success. You hold the carb heat on. You wait. 15, 20, 30 seconds. The roughness passes. RPM begins to climb. In many cases, it comes back higher than it was before the ice formed. Because the restriction is gone and the engine is finally getting the mixture it was supposed to have. If a pilot applies carb heat, feels that initial drop and rough run, and pulls the knob back in, they've accomplished nothing. The ice is still there. They just scared themselves. Hold it on, give it time. Watch the tachometer. Trust what the procedure says. What if you apply carb heat and RPM drops slightly but stays there? No roughness, no recovery? That's also okay. Warm air is less dense than cold air, so there's a small efficiency penalty. You've confirmed there was no ice, or at least none significant. You can take the heat off if the conditions don't warrant continued use, or leave it on. Either way, you're in good shape. Now, what if you apply carb heat and things do not improve? What if the engine keeps losing power or doesn't respond? A few possibilities. 1. The icing is so severe that the carb heat can't generate enough warmth quickly enough, especially at low power, where there isn't much exhaust heat to work with. In that case, you may want to advance the throttle if you can to generate more heat through the system while holding carb heat on. 2. You may have another problem entirely. Fuel, ignition, mechanical. 3. If you're low, your priorities shift quickly. Establish best glide speed. Pick a landing area, declare if you can. The carb heat is not a magic switch. It's a tool. And like any tool, it works best when you use it before you need it desperately. Your POH, your pilot's operating handbook, is your authority on when and how to use carb heat in your specific airplane. Some manufacturers say apply it before every power reduction. Some specify certain phases of flight. Some want periodic application throughout flight in icing conditions. Read that section before you fly. Have it in your mental model. For the check ride, the Airman Certification Standards for the Private Pilot Certificate addresses carburetor icing across several task areas. Your examiner will want to know the conditions that promote icing, the indications to look for, the proper procedure, and what the POH says about your specific airplane. They're not looking for you to recite a definition. They're looking for situational awareness. They want to know you're thinking about this in real time. I want to say something plainly before we wrap up. Carburetor icing has killed pilots. It's in the NTSB database in significant numbers. Accident after accident with the same basic shape. Power reduction for approach or descent. Engine loses power. Pilot doesn't recognize the cause or doesn't act quickly enough or is too low by the time the diagnosis arrives. Forced landing. Sometimes a crash. What makes those accidents so difficult to look at is that almost none of them were unavoidable. A carbureted engine doesn't go from normal to stopped in 2 seconds without warning. It gives you RPM drop, it gives you roughness, it gives you performance that doesn't match what your gauges say it should be. The pilots who don't survive are the ones who didn't know to look for it, or who were at 200 feet on final when the diagnosis finally landed. Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. We tend to think of carb heat as an emergency tool, something you reach for when the engine stumbles. And yes, it absolutely functions that way, but its real value is as a preventive measure. If you're using it regularly, proactively, in conditions where icing is possible, the odds are good you'll never experience full-on carburetor ice at all. The pilots who get into trouble are almost always the ones who waited to feel the problem before responding to it. One more thing. If you're flying a fuel-injected engine, a fuel-injected Cessna 172, a Piper Aero, a Beechcraft Bonanza, any of those, you don't have a carburetor, icing is not your concern. What you do have is the potential for induction system icing, ice forming at the air filter or intake, and your airplane has an alternate air source for exactly this scenario. Same underlying principle, different hardware, different control. Know where it is, know what it does, know when the POH says to use it. The principle of staying ahead of the airplane is the same regardless of what's under the cowl. 4 things to carry away from today: check temperature and dew point before every flight. If the spread is less than 20 degrees and you're flying a carbureted engine, you're in potential icing conditions. Plan accordingly. Use carburetor heat, proactively, before power reductions. During extended low-power cruise and humid conditions as a periodic check, even in cruise. Make it a habit, not an emergency response. Know what carb heat feels like in your airplane when there is no ice? Practice it with your instructor. Feel the small normal RPM drop, know what you're looking for, so the abnormal response stands out when you see it. And if the engine loses power unexpectedly and you don't have an obvious explanation, carb ice should be near the top of your list. Apply carb heat. Hold it on, give it 15 to 30 seconds. Watch the RPM act on what you see. The source for today's technical content is the FAA Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge document number, FAA 083-25, along with the Airplane Flying Handbook. And your POH, always your POH, is the final word for your specific airplane. RadioHangar.com for more. I'm Pattern. Stay ahead of the airplane, and I'll see you next time.